Dit is SBS Dutch.
You were working on the ship, right?
Yes, I was able, what I call an able seaman. A matros, an able seaman. And just want to say, I did a couple of trips on other ships. Then I was transferred after my leave onto the Johan van Oldebarneveld. And yeah, you did the run of what I called on the gentleman's watch. And that was from 4 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock. And at night also, from 4 o'clock in the afternoon till 8 o'clock. On the watch, you had three things you had to do. You had the steering, the lookout, and what I call a free turn. That means you make the coffee.
Most important.
Yeah. And that was like an hour and 20 minutes each turn. I was a bit more or a little bit less. Some of them was an hour and 10 minutes. Sometimes an hour and 30 minutes. Now, normally there were three of us on the watch. And you took it in turn to steer it. And the lookout. And what they call the free turn. Flag racing or any other little miscellaneous things we used to do on the watch.
Yeah. You also worked on the Karimata and the Java. Was the Johan different?
Oh, different in so far. On the other ships, that was like purely freight. And we had a couple of passengers sometimes. But like the Johan, that was all passengers, mainly immigrants. There were some people that were like on a cruise in the early days. People I got friendly with, they were Americans, and they were on a round-the-world cruise.
Yeah, what do you remember from the food and the drinks on board?
The drinks, that was duty-free. So we didn't have to pay duty on the alcohol. And also the cigarettes are duty-free. I used to smoke in those days.
And the food, so, was it okay?
Yeah, the food was okay. The chefs who looked after the passengers, I think they also looked after us a little bit. I don't really know how it mixed up, but I have really no complaints about the food. And it was traditionally Dutch. You know, you had porridge in the morning, and you had a lunchtime, there was like and a dinner. And because we were in shifts, we had to have it staggered. One of the things I remember also, on the free turn, you had to go all around the ship and we had to get a clock and punch all the keys into the clock. There was like a fire drill. We went all around the ship on different spots. We had to turn that key in the clock. And then one of the things, you went through the kitchen and there was a highlight because we used to pick out. We had to, one of the things I remember, there was a few of us, I can't remember how many, but about, it might have been five or six of us. And then we had a liter of yogurt each with heaps of sugar, and we were picked out on a liter of yogurt.
Oh, good so, days.
Yeah. And we were really discouraged to just mingle with the passengers. That was a no-no. But sometimes you sort of get closer to people and then you talk and, you know, that was all right.
Most of them were boys working on the ship, I reckon.
No, there were a few girls as well. They were like the stewards, the stewardesses. You know, in the kitchen, in the service and all that. There were a lot of girls.
Okay. And what about the sleep arrangements? Because I've heard from passengers, the people on the top had the more luxurious suites. The further down, the worse it got. Where did you sleep? How was your sleep
arrangement? I slept on the left side, right up front. There was like a deck with the hatches. And we were there sort of around there. We had a cabin. And there was five of us in the cabin. It was all right. Nothing to really complain about it. And the other ships, we had a cabin on our own. So that was a bit of a come down to have it to share it with five. But on the whole, it was amicable. Very rarely there was any conflicts of anything. There was one boy, he sort of tried to bully me a little bit, but there was no problem.
No.
So,
and for passengers, there was some entertainment as well. Did you have time to enjoy some time there and see the entertainment?
Yes. Actually, after we left New Zealand on the way to America, we had a whole school of girls, and there were, I think there were mainly Maori girls, and they did some, I don't know what you call it, the dancing, they had balls on a string. They used to swing them around. And they were really good. They went to America to do some exhibition, I would say. And they put a performance on for us as well. And it was exceptionally well received. It was really good.
Oh.
And we used to have movies regularly. And then in some places, when you came ashore and you were not a roster to do any particular time, we went on shore and we amused ourselves there a bit. I remember one thing, when we were into Sydney, I saw a movie, Ben-Hur. And I'm not quite sure at the time, there was like a world premiere from the movie from Ben-Hur, and I saw that in Sydney.
Wow.
So
great. I was also wondering, how was the trip? It was very long.
No, 80 days. That was the criteria. 80 days around the world. You know that story from Jules Verne? 80 days around the world?
Yeah.
Yes. We did it in 81 days, I think. Because on the way back after we left Panama, we were in the Caribbean. We had sort of an altercation with a tornado. So we were laid up for a whole day just drifting, doing nothing. We didn't get any wind. It was just calm. But we want to avoid that tornado. And when we came into New York, the press was there and all that, and the taking, you know, photos and all that. And we've been painting the boat on a couple of spots, and there was sort of like what I call the lead oxide type of paint. There was that red stuff. And they sort of said, oh, you know, there's been a terrible hurricane, but we didn't. That was all right.
How was it to arrive in the first Australian port of Fremantle? What was your thought when you saw Australia for the first time?
Oh, I can't really remember much about it. I know we saw some statue for some bloke, and I got some photos of it, but I can't really remember much about it. I can't even remember what time of day we arrived. I know I went ashore there to have a look, but I can't really much remember much about it. It wasn't really impressive.
No.
And according to my photos, I've been in Melbourne also, and I think in Adelaide, but I can't remember much about them either. I remember Sydney, because I went to show that a Sydney movie, but I must have been working on duties.
Yeah, and too also, busy to register this.
Yeah. Also, I think when we arrived, that was like June, July in 1958, I think it was. So it was bitterly cold down in the bay. So it wasn't really nice, warm Australian weather. You know, you sort of all those here from sunny Australia. It was definitely not sunny, not warm.
No.
It was bloody freezing.
Can you tell me the story about your friend and the incident in the pool?
He was a friend of mine, and unfortunately, I cannot even remember his name. You know, that's that long ago. We were sitting down in the well. There's like an open area underneath the decking. And we were talking. He said, oh, I'm going to go for a swim. And he went for a swim. And then we get a phone call from the Brits. Go and have a look at him. Because he doesn't look very well. So we came up. We went up to the swimming pool. And he was drowned in the swimming pool. And it was a sad, sad, sad story because he was a few years older than us, than me. He was what I call a quartermaster. That was like a little bit higher than an able seaman, and he had different duties. And he was making his last trip because his wife was pregnant. They were expecting a baby. She was 3 or 4 months pregnant. And he gonna join the Dutch, what you call the Rijkspolitie, you know, the federal police in Holland. He put an application for them and he was gonna join them. unfortunately, he died. And we had to take him off in the Red Sea. We went into Aden and we buried him. There was a bit of a controversy because the captain wanted to shove him overboard. And I personally, I really made a fuss and song and dance about it. I was really upset. At the time, he was a good pal of mine. You know, you just don't chuck him overboard. That's a bit of rubbish. So we buried him in Aden. And what I can remember that, there were some English military people who sort of helped us carry the casket. And I carried the casket myself with another couple of fellows. And where we buried him, there was sort of just behind a big oil depot. And I had photos of that. But unfortunately, we got burned out in the bushfires here in 09. So a lot of my photos, everything is lost. I haven't got any more.
Oh, that's sad.
So,
Yeah. How do you look back on those 81 days on the Johan?
Oh, it was all right. It was pretty good. It was a job. And it was good money, comparatively. You know, you were earning twice as much as you could earn ashore, especially as a young fella. You know, I was an electrician beforehand and afterwards as well. And you're making at the time probably 30 guilders, 35 guilders a week. And at the Johan van Oldebelt, we did about 400 guilders a month. So that was a lot of money in comparative, you know. So we done all right.
Yeah. So, how did you end up in Australia in the end? Because this was your work. You were going back to the Netherlands.
Yeah, but that's what I said. I got married in New Guinea with an Australian girl. We were in the missions in Mount Hagen, and she was a teacher there. And I was aroused about. I looked after the workshop and the electrical and the mechanics and the vehicles and all that sort of stuff. So I was sort of what you would call in Nederland, a manager van alles. So, you know, I did everything, but that sort of came my way. I built dams and I repaired cars and I built a power station and, you know, all that sort of in New Guinea. And then we got married and then later on we came to Australia. That's how I came here because my wife comes originally from Belgrade.
Yeah, and you're having a great life here.
Oh, yeah. Ups and downs. That'll be all right.
Do you have something else to add about the Johan?
Yes, you know, the Johan, we went down from Amsterdam, Southampton, and then we went to Genoa, and then Portsight, Suez. And then, yes, we buried my friend in Aden. Then we went across to Fremantle. And I think we went to Adelaide, Melbourne, and Sydney. Then we went to Wellington. And Wellington was different because Wellington, they didn't have enough dock workers. So we put all the luggage from the passengers. We operated all the cranes and everything ourselves. And we get paid in New Zealand pounds. And from New Zealand, from Wellington, we went to Tahiti, Papeete. I hired a couple of scooters there. I mean, went on some trips around the island. And from there, we went to Panama. And the other side from Panama, we came out and we were sort of stuck behind a hurricane. And we were drifting for a day. Then we went to Miami. And in Miami, I was in a bar, in a hotel, or what you would call. And I got a real American silver dollar from 1700 something. That's a change. That was just, you know, in a change. So, and I had that up until now, until it got burned. And then from Miami, I went to New York. And from New York to Southampton and then Amsterdam. And I was on leave afterwards. And I went to see my cousin in the bus. And he says, oh, I'll go now. I have to catch the train. So I walked to the station, and lo and behold, I came across some people. They were passengers on the Johan van Oldebarnevelt, and they were in the middle of nowhere, in Den Bosch, up the straat, coming to tegen. And anyway, they were straight away, oh, you have to come with us and talk to us and blah, blah, blah. So I went with those people to their house, and then we had a couple of hours, and I think I got the last train to Nijmegen. So,
wow,
but
small world.
How a coincidence, the coincidence, you know?
I know.
People you met on a boat, and then later on you sort of meet them on the street.
Like, deel, geef je reactie. Volg SBS Dutch op Facebook.